impact and progress on improving the state's transportation system. The governor called for the package to also provide sustainable new resources on a long-term basis for highways, local roads, and transit. And the governor said the package needs to be fiscally responsible for the transportation and the state, and that the package should not raise taxes. The governor's proposal does indeed build on the successes of the 2003 package. 2004 was the largest construction season in state history, investing more than $1 billion in more than 200 projects throughout the state. There were 75 project completions in 2004.
Representative Leader.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. McDonald, you said the largest construction season in history. That's on paper, not in the field, correct?
No, that's
filing.
I believe that is in bulk, Representative Leader.
Beg your pardon?
I believe, Madam Chair, Representative Leader, in terms of projects and dollars, it was the largest in history.
Madam Chair. Thank you, Madam Chair. I think in your total package, weren't there a number of contracts that weren't let or constructed in that total package of $1 billion?
Mr. McFarland.
Madam Chair, Representative Leader, what I'm talking about for the 2004 construction season is the entire construction season, both from our regular program, projects funded by the remainder of the 2000 advanced construction or dollars that were provided by the legislature, and the addition of the beginnings of the 2003 package. So it's all of those elements together, not just the 2003 package.
Right, thank you. Just for that moment, now that we have a quorum, I will call the meeting to order. Ms. Lott will note the roll. We'll continue with the presentation. We'll take care of the committee business at the end of the presentation. If you'll please continue.
To Representative Leader's point, part of the success of the 2004 construction season were the investments made possible by the governor's 2003 bond accelerated program. That program is on course to deliver 17 major capital and safety preservation projects more than 60 years earlier than were originally scheduled. Also on course in that package are 19 metro area transit advantage projects. The 2003 package is delivering on its promise to save years of construction inflation and provide accelerated user benefits by completing projects earlier. MnDOT has also learned a great deal in the course of implementing the 2003 package, knowledge that will help us deliver the governor's 2005 proposal and better address the state's transportation needs more quickly. We have learned how to better prepare for and better deliver project accelerations. We are learning how to better manage and account for the use of federal advanced construction financing and using that valuable financing tool to move projects forward. And we have been doing this learning and moving forward during a time of unprecedented federal funding uncertainty as Congress continues its year-and-a-half impasse over reauthorizing a long-term federal funding and policy act. The governor's 2005 transportation proposal is the largest ever proposed by a Minnesota governor. In its first 10 years of implementation, fiscal years 2008 through 2017, this package is projected to provide more than $7 billion in new investment power to accelerate dozens of major highway and transit projects throughout the state without raising taxes. This magnitude clearly meets the governor's criteria for a substantial package. Governor Pawlenty strongly believes that transportation investments are a critical priority for the state of Minnesota. The governor's proposal will fund construction of new metro highway capacity and dedicated transitways. It supports funding and development of the Tier 1 transitways proposed by the Metropolitan Council and its emerging transportation policy plan. It funds improvements to statewide interregional corridors that connect Greater Minnesota to the metro area. And it provides long-term, permanent funding increases for local roads, Metro Transit, and Greater Minnesota Transit. The governor's package is built on two main financing components. The first component is the permanent dedication through a constitutional amendment of all motor vehicle sales tax revenues to transportation, highways, local roads, and transit. The second component is a $4.5 billion 10-year trunk highway bonding package targeted at accelerating the construction of critical highway projects throughout the state. The governor believes the time has come for the state to make good on the decades-old promise of dedicating MVEST revenues for transportation. In the first 10 years of implementation, the MVEST dedication, as proposed by the governor, will provide $2.65 billion in new revenues for transportation needs. As proposed by the governor, in those 10 years, the revenue would be distributed as follows: an additional $1 billion for the metro area transit system, an additional $950 million for state highways, $580 million in additional funding for the county and municipal state aid systems, $40 million in additional revenue to support transit in greater Minnesota, and an additional $80 million that would go to that 5% flexible fund that is in the Highway User Tax Distribution Fund under the Constitution. There are two charts that I'm going to show here briefly. I just wanted to point out that these charts are in the members' packets for your review. It simply shows graphically the numbers that I just stated. When you look out 30 years, the governor's proposed MVEST dedication would provide the following revenues to transportation needs: nearly $4.5 billion for metro transit, a near similar amount for state highways, $2.5 billion in additional revenues for counties and municipal systems, $190 million for greater Minnesota transit, and $360 million for the 5% fund. Again, that is over 30 years. The governor proposes to approach the MVEST dedication in the following manner. There would be a constitutional question on the ballot in the general election in 2006. The dedication would be phased in over 5 years to help mitigate the immediate impacts to the general fund. A schedule of how the phase-in would work is in your member packets. Essentially, the general fund, which currently receives slightly more than 46% of MVEST revenues, would lose 10% of those revenues a year for 4 years, then the remaining 6% or so in the final year. Of the dollars then that would be available for MVEST dedication to transportation, the governor proposes to divide it up 60% to the Highway User Tax Distribution Fund, which would be distributed to state highways, counties, and cities as per current constitutional formula, 38% to the Metro Transit System, and 2% for Greater Minnesota Transit. It is fair to ask what impact this proposal has on the state's general fund. In the first general, the first general fund impacts of the MVEST dedication would occur in fiscal year 2008, following the 2006 general election. In the 2008 and 9 biennium, this dedication would transfer $191 million from the general fund, from projected general fund revenues, to transportation dedication. In the 2010-2011 biennium, that amount would be $465 million. There is a schedule of the MVEST impacts to the general fund in your packet. The MVEST dedication will be fully phased in fiscal year 12. And with this dedication, the governor is clearly establishing transportation as a critical state funding priority within the state's existing financial resources. For the state highway system, the MVES dedication is a source of new financial resources to address the growing needs for state highway safety, preservation, and maintenance projects. Growing needs that themselves do not are not very appropriate or don't lend themselves to bond financing. MnDOT's first priority is safety and preservation of the system. And as in the 2003 package the governor proposed, the 2005 package recognizes these needs and provides increased resources to meet them. The MVES dollars in the governor's plan are not targeted for debt service for the next component I'll talk about. The MVES dedication will also provide revenues and resources to help in the construction of major metro area transitway corridors, as I stated, as identified in the Metropolitan Council's Transportation Policy Plan. Met Council Chairman Peter Bell is here, and he will discuss the impacts of the governor's plan on metro transit in greater detail following my presentation. Two points are important to understand about the governor's plan. The governor's plan assumes no reduction in non-MVES appropriations to Met Transit. The governor's plan cannot be a swap of resources for the Metropolitan Transit System. The governor's plan also does not preclude preclude continuing to address major transit capital needs for new transit projects with general obligation bonding when necessary. And that point is made clearly evident by the governor including the North Star Commuter Rail Line and the Cedar Avenue Busway bonding needs in his recent bonding proposal. The second component of the governor's plan is a $4.5 billion 10-year trunk highway bonding package. The package will be used to accelerate dozens of delayed or unfunded major projects statewide. These projects are the type that focus on congestion relief, new capacity, bottlenecks, safety, and interregional corridors, and the types of projects that have long-term construction schedules and long-term benefits that lend themselves to bond financing. Governor Plenty and Lieutenant Governor Molnar clearly believe that bonding is a responsible and practical method for accelerating highway projects. The bonding package is assumed in modeling for this package to be a 10-year package from fiscal year 2008 through 2017. Debt service for this package for the 30-year program will require less than 50% of projected growth in non-MVES trunk highway fund revenues. That's the growth over 2005 levels in gas tax, tab fee, federal funds, and then using 100% of projected FAST revenues as we move forward into FAST lanes in the metropolitan area. This is a very conservative and responsible proposal for bonding. In order to stress, I want to stress again that this is a responsible, practical proposal for bonding. And I want to go through briefly the growth assumptions that were used for the revenue streams that will support debt service so you can see that point. For the gas tax, for gas tax growth projections over 2005 levels, for the years 2006 through 9, there are current Department of Finance projections for gas tax revenues that were included in the November forecast. Our modeling uses those projections. From fiscal years 2010 through 13, we apply a 1.5% annual growth factor to gas tax revenues. From 2014 through 23, the annual growth factor in the modeling is 1%. And from 2024 to 2038, we apply a 0.5% growth factor to gas tax revenues in the modeling. This modeling provides $2.7 billion in new revenue for the Trunk Highway Fund through from 2006 to 38 over fiscal year 2005 levels. When we're putting this bonding package together, we are only talking about debt service from growth in funding. For the TAB fee growth model, again, for 2006 through 2009, our modeling uses Department of Finance projections, and from 2010 to 2038, we use a 2.5% annual growth factor to calculate the growth in TAB fees expected under this program. This modeling provides $5.9 billion in new revenue for the Trunk Highway Fund for 2006 through 38. For federal funding, for 2008 to 11, we are projecting a $75 million a year growth in federal funds available for trunk highways over 2005 levels. For 2012 and 17, $125 million a year over 2005 levels. And you can see the numbers there. 2018 to 23, $175 million. 2024 to 38, we level it out for modeling purposes at $225 million a year over the 2005 base. These projections show the growth in federal funding for trunk highways of $5.4 billion from fiscal year 2006 through 38.
Madam Chair.
Representative Magna.
Can I jump into the question here?
Certainly.
The witness. Mr. McFarland, does this include, does that last slide include the additional federal funding that would be available resolving the ethanol penalty that we're paying now, for example, using the biofuels, taking those taxes out of the, currently taking them out of the Highway Trust Fund and in the future taking them out of the general fund?
Madam Chair, Representative Magnus, yes, it would include that, though we are not at this point certain how that tax change is going to manifest itself in the federal reauthorization bill. So our projections are rather general projections on federal funding. We'll know a lot more about how that ethanol change affects the bottom line of federal funding revenues for the state once Congress reauthorizes its act.
Madam Chair, Mr. McFarland, approximately how much a year is that, is your estimate?
Mr. McFarland.
Of the ethanol? It's not a specific number in those calculations. We've done a general calculation of a very conservative growth estimate. We'll know more about the direct impacts when Congress passes its bill.
Thank you. Please continue.
Sure. We've made a very, what we think is a very small and conservative estimate on fast lane revenues for the state. If you recall, the governor is supportive of exploring the construction of fast lanes or lanes that would be toll lanes in the future, and we are exploring that. We believe that will be implemented in the metropolitan area in the near future. We're going through several studies to explore that possibility. From fiscal year 2008 through 38, we're projecting a total in this model of approximately $950 million in fast lane revenues. All of those revenues would be dedicated to debt service for projects on which the lanes or the tolls are collected. And that money could support either public debt, Trunk Highway Fund debt, or private debt, depending on how fast lanes are actually implemented in the state.
Representative Larson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Can you tell us, as it relates to those assumptions, how many fast lanes we're talking about and in which locations those are built into your assumptions?
Mr. McFarland.
Madam Chair, Representative Larson, at the moment, MnDOT is conducting a transit or a toll lane feasibility study for the metropolitan area. We are currently looking at identifying, we don't have them identified yet, at identifying two fast lane projects in the metropolitan area in the near future. We would expect that we might be able to go beyond that in this 30-year time frame. but we don't have those projects yet identified. Like I said, we're currently going through an analysis of all of the major corridors in the metropolitan area to see which ones best lend themselves to this type of a project and this type of financing.
Representative Larson.
So just as a follow-up, Mr. McFarland, your projections show that two fast lanes, in addition to the one that's to come online, will create the $900 million?
Ms. McFarland.
Madam Chair, Representative Larson, we're right now focusing in on two fast lanes in the near future, and then we would expect that those would grow in the long term.
Thank you. Please continue.
I want to stress that these conservative growth assumptions that we've applied to these revenue streams would identify approximately $8 billion available for trunk highway debt service from fiscal year 2006 and 38. Again, we are not proposing to use every dollar of growth in these funds for debt service. We're proposing to dedicate or identify less than half of this growth for debt service. The bonding package and debt and interest assumptions identify about $6.7 billion in debt service needs from fiscal year 2008 through 38. That should read 2008. We believe bonding is very responsible fiscal management. The bonding package is founded, as I stated, on very conservative revenue growth estimates and the revenue streams identified for debt service. This is very important. Total debt service being proposed, that's debt service we currently have on our books and debt service being proposed in the $4.5 billion package, will comprise less than 18% of total trunk highway fund revenues from fiscal year 2008 and 2017. Total debt service on the books and proposed will take less than 14% of total projected trunk highway fund revenues from fiscal year 2008 through 2038. These are very, very low and responsible debt service percentages for a fund like the Trunk Highway Fund that is dedicated almost solely to major construction. These are sustainable and they allow large amounts of cash on hand to do all of the cash things that the legislature and the state expects MnDOT to do. This chart is also in your packet. The overall investment power of the governor's complete proposal is impressive, providing nearly $5.5 billion in additional investment capability for the Trunk Highway Fund in fiscal years 2008 to 17, an average of more than $500 million per year in additional investment capability. This chart, which shows the projected impact on the Trunk Highway Fund when you're assuming $450 million in bonding a year over 10 years as a modeling assumption, is in your packet. I think it's also fair to ask how this package compares to raising taxes. To match the overall investment power of the package to Trunk Highway Fund in years 2008 through 17, this would require a 25-cent per gallon increase in the gas tax now to match that investment power. To match the investment power of the bonding component alone, the $4.5 billion, would require a 20-cent gas tax increase now. To simply finance the debt service on the bond program would require a 10-cent per gallon gasoline tax increase. The MVEST dedication alone is equivalent to a 7 to 9 cent gas tax increase. Increasing taxes is not a necessary element of moving forward on transportation projects. And for your information, in last November's election, for transportation initiatives that were on the ballot across the country, 100% of transportation bonding initiatives put forward to the voters across the country were approved, while in comparison, 54% of transportation tax increase initiatives won voter approval.
Representative Abrams.
Madam Chair, Mr. McFarland, it's my recollection that in a number of the jurisdictions that voted on a transportation tax increase, the initiative required a supermajority, either 60% or 66% of the vote, whereas I believe most of the bonding required a majority vote. Do you think the department can get what the vote requirements were per jurisdiction? Because I don't think it's quite fair to say that if you're one of the 12 that failed, but you got 56% but needed 60% to say that there wasn't support for tax increase. I think we're comparing different things here to some extent.
Mr. McFarland.
Madam Chair, Representative Abrams will certainly provide the details behind those numbers to the committee as soon as possible with the vote totals and the vote requirements.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Representative Earhart.
Thank you, Madam Chair. There are a couple of questions here on the MVS dedication. Where are you dedicating that? Going into the Highway Trust Fund?
Yeah.
Mr.
McFarland. Madam Chair, Representative Earhart, the governor is proposing that the transportation, that the MVS revenues would be dedicated 60% to the Highway User Tax Distribution Fund, 38% to Metro Transit, and 2% to Greater Minnesota Transit.
So, Madam Chair,
Representative Earhart,
you're proposing setting up new accounts for dedication.
Madam Chair, Representative Earhart, there would have to be new accounts for Metro Transit and Greater Minnesota Transit, yes. But there would not have to be new accounts because the Highway User Tax Distribution Fund already, you know, is already exists, and it would just go there.
Right. Madam Chair,
Representative Earhart.
Mr. McFarland, on one of these slides on page 3, it talks about it's actually page 5. We have a 7.15 billion transportation plan, and they talk about 6.7 billion in debt service. And needed. Do you think that's a good ratio for every dollar you put in, you're going to pay a dollar in debt service?
Mr. McFarland.
Madam Chair, Representative Earhart, the $7.15 billion impact is the projected impact in fiscal years 2008 through 2017. It does not include the longer-term impacts of the MVEST transfer. It would take over 30 years. What you're referring to for debt service, the governor's proposed a $4.5 billion program of trunk highway bonding for fiscal year 2008 through 17. Over the 30-year life of that program, it would take $6.7 billion in unadjusted revenues, I might add, an unadjusted debt service to pay for the 4.5. And if I may, Madam Chair, to that point, I have a chart that Representative Earhart might be interested in. Let's use the take that one down. If you can bear with us for just a second, Madam Chair. Go to the second one. Madam Chair and members, if you can see this chart. This is a chart showing the impact of the governor's proposal, including bonding, and the red line. And so you can see how the investment in the trunk highway system and the trunk highway fund spikes and peaks from fiscal year 2008 through 2017, showing the impact of the bond revenue. The blue line is simply the cash, if you were to just cash flow the governor's proposal over time. You can see that the blue line in 2007 through 2008 through 2017, the bonding program provides you far greater investment power over cash only, and then you see the line drop off in future years as you pay the debt service off on the bonds. Now, this is unadjusted dollars. Lucy, could we see the next one? Yeah, the adjusted dollars in there. This shows the real value of the bonding program. When you adjust the cash flow and the investment power for inflation over time, you can see that we have this spike of investment in 2008 through 17, and you pay off that investment in future years with much less valuable dollars. The lines start to flatten out. The area of benefit 2008 through 17 is greater than the area of cost in the future years. And this does not account for the user benefits that would accrue by having these projects built earlier and available for use for the driving public and for transit projects.
Sure.
Representative Earhart.
You maybe answered my question before, but geez, I just couldn't understand it. I guess I was looking at the wrong figure. $4.5 billion state highway bonding package with debt and interest assumptions identifying $6.7 billion in debt service needs. Those all seem to be, you maybe answered that. I had the wrong figure, 7.15, because part of that is not bonding, but 4.5 carried by 6.7.
The
debt service, if I'm reading your
charge
right.
Madam Chair, I'm representing
Ireland.
What is the debt service on your borrowing package? Yes, that's the answer.
$6.7 billion. That's the debt service on the 4.5 over 30 years. And that's, Madam Chair, Representative Earhart, that is the way capital bonding and debt works. That's the way mortgages work and the like. And we'll be paying that $6.7 billion dollars, and when we're paying that out over 30 years, we'll be paying off those bonds and paying off those projects with far less valuable dollars than they are today.
Thank you. Representative Earhart, did you have another question, or can I move on to Representative Hornstein?
I see that, Madam Chair, that Lieutenant Governor slash Transportation Commissioner Caramano is quoted in several instances. One, that bonding makes sense and is fiscally responsible for equal the financial benefit gained by bonding when the need to raise the gas tax by 20 cents, and that is just not practical. Somehow, if it were something about farming, I think I could figure that Commissioner Malno would give me some expert advice, but I don't know if that's necessarily true in your quote here. That I don't know where you're going with this, for the public or just for the committee. If it was slapping the hogs, I think I'd take her expert advice, but I don't know about fiscal matters on this package.
Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Mr. McFarland. The plan seems very dependent on the MBEST, and I know that over the last couple of years we've seen revenue decline because of the economy and other factors. Do you have a contingency plan if MBEST revenues don't meet the projections? It seems like a somewhat unstable funding source.
Mr. McFarland.
Madam Chair and Representative Hornstein, first I want to reiterate, in the financing package related to bonding debt service, MVEST revenues are not considered debt service revenues. The MVEST proposal here is for cash purposes for trunk highways, local roads, Metro Transit, Greater Minnesota Transit. So if the MVEST does not perform, it would impact, you know, just like if the gas tax doesn't perform, it would impact the you know, year by year or biennium cash appropriations for those purposes. We did not build MVEST revenues into the debt service model.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. McFarland. And next up will be Chair Peter Bell from the Council. And as he's coming up, we're going to take care of a little business here for the committee. Members, I did start on time at 12:30. We were not able to do introductions, et cetera, at that time, as there was many members missing. So given that this is our first committee hearing, I'd at least like to take a minute with members to introduce themselves, the state, their district, and where it's located. We'll start to my right with Representative Ruth, who is the vice chair of the committee.
Thank you. Connie Ruth, and I represent Autonomous, my third term.
Who's in Abrams?
I'm Ron Abrams. I represent District 3D. A way to think about is the intersection of 394 and 494. This is my ninth term.
Representative Anderson.
Bruce Anderson, represent the area of Wright County between Buffalo, Monticello, Maple Lake, and Clearwater. This is my sixth term.
Thank you. Representative Nelson.
Representative Mike Nelson from Brooklyn Park, and I apologize for being late. I got involved in a conversation, and I'm from, this is my second term.
Thank you. Representative Hornstein.
Hi, Representative Frank Hornstein, District 60B, which is the southwest part of Minneapolis. This is my second term.
Representative Leader.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I represent four counties or parts of five counties, I think, in northwestern Minnesota, about as far north as you can get.
And if I might, how many years have you been on this committee?
This is my 20th year, Madam Chair.
And
my first year.
Congratulations. And Representative Leader is the lead Democrat on our committee, and we're glad that you're here. Representative Magnus.
Madam Chair, I'm Doug Magnus. I represent the southwest corner of the state, south of Bernie. I have four counties that I jokingly call representing many times the northeast suburbs of Sioux Falls, South Dakota. Since to my benefit, probably the folks down there, many of them don't have access to metropolitan, the Twin Cities media, so they get Sioux Falls news. So it kind of keeps me out of trouble down there for the most part.
Representative Larson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Dan Larson from Bloomington. I represent north central and northeast Bloomington, as well as the eastern part of the district.
Thank you. Representative Earhart.
Ron Earhart from 41A, which is surrounded by Highway 494, Highway 169, and bisected by Highway 100 and Highway 62, otherwise known as the Crosstown.
Thank you. And, of course, Representative Earhart is chair of the Transportation Policy Committee. To my right is Joyce Fodd, who is my legislative assistant. She served with me while I chaired the Civil Law Committee. If any of you need an excused absence, it would be in your best interest to let her know as soon as possible. She's great with keeping records and will certainly be able to help you in any way that you need. To my left is Becky Gervin, who is the committee administrator. This is her third year here with the caucus, her second term with this committee, and certainly glad to have her around. Mr. Walls is our fiscal analyst. Mr. Walls, how long have you served in the transportation finance area? All right, and then Mr. Williams, who is with House Research, nonpartisan staff, and Mr. Williams, how long have you served with the transportation area?
Madam Chair, 36 years.
36 years. We are in good hands here with lots of institutional knowledge, so that makes me feel real good. As far as from Republican House staff, we have Margaret Cotterick and Dan Kane from DFL Research, and Mark Nesbitt here at the end of the table is with House Republican Constituent Services, and I don't know if there's a member of the DFL staff in the back. Certainly, if you'd like to join us at the table, we have plenty of room. I told Mr. Nesbitt he was welcome to join us at the table, and you are as well. And then most importantly, our page for this session, if you'd stand, please, is Lucas Fess, and one thing that I like to say to the people that are in our audience, please take your pop cans, beverages, and papers with you when you leave, because I believe your mother is probably not in the room. With that, we will start on time with each committee hearing, and at this time I'm not planning on meeting again before the 20th, although we are having a joint hearing at 2:30 today with the Transportation Policy Committee. We will do that occasionally. The only members of the committee that are not on policy are Representative Abrams, Nelson, and Magnus. I've talked to them about that. And as far as new members, we have no freshmen. I think maybe they were all afraid of me or something. This committee will move pretty quickly with issues. We've all been through this before, other than Representative Abrams, who's been around long enough to pick this stuff up really quickly. So we're not going to do a lot of what I lovingly refer to as dog and pony shows. We're going to get to work, get the information in front of this committee, and keep moving. So, Chair Bell, I'm sorry to have interrupted your presentation, but if you'd like to continue at this time.
Madam Chair, I appreciate the opportunity to come before the committee and elaborate on the governor's transportation package, focusing on issues relating to transit. And in deference to the other pressing matters that the committee has before it, I will attempt to be brief. First slide I would like to show puts some of these issues in context. I have long said that traffic congestion is this region's number one livability issue, and as chair of the Met Council for 2 years, I believe that every day to be the case. As you can see by some of the facts on the overhead, average commute is stuck in traffic 42 hours a year. That is up 3 hours from 1982. It is estimated 93 million gallons of gasoline were wasted as a result of this congestion in 02, 970 million in time and fuel in 02, and 60%, this is perhaps the most important one, of freeway miles congested at least 1 hour a day. As we look to the future, and I think the number one task of the Metropolitan Council is to really plan for the growth of this region by over a million people over the next 30 years. That is a fairly significant amount of growth. We are the most rapidly growing regions in the northern tier of states. This is anticipated to create over 500,000 new jobs, and more germane to this committee's deliberations are the 4 million additional trips that we anticipate will be generated by this growth. 25 million miles, additional vehicle miles traveled each day, and 80% of freeways congested at least 1 hour a day. That is what our future will look like if, in fact, we take no action. This overhead, I think, gives the most visible illustration of the growth of the traffic congestion as compared to population. You can see in the upper left-hand corner, it's the millions of people and where that was at in 1970 at about 2 million, where we project that to be in 2030, which is going to be about 3.7 million. And you can also see the vehicle miles traveled. We started off at about 2 million, and we project we will be close to 90 million in 2030. Right now, we're at 56 million vehicle miles traveled each day in this region. And it is growing. The important point of this slide is that it is growing much faster than our population. This, I think, also is a instructive slide. This slide illustrates the traffic growth on major corridors between 1980 and 2000. And I won't go into detail about all of these, but you can see, well, on the western part of the region, 494, 175%. On the far eastern part, on 94, going out toward Wisconsin, 182%. Those are just two examples of the tremendous growth in traffic congestion or growth in traffic from 2000 to from 1980 to 2000. And here again, this is why we are all stuck in traffic, and if we do nothing about it, this will continue to worsen. More to the point, I thought it would be helpful to review for the committee very briefly where our current transit funding comes from and where it is spent. And this is our regional transit budget. It doesn't include those dollars Mr. McFarland spoke to earlier about in greater Minnesota. This is just in the seven-county region, and this is for calendar year 05. Currently, we get 43% of our budget from the motor vehicle sales tax. That's $134 million each year. We get 21.5% of the motor vehicle sales tax. That is scheduled to drop to 20.5% in 08. From the general fund, we currently get 18% of our budget, which represents about $57 million. From fares, we get $76 million, and that represents 24%. From the federal government, we get about 9% of our budget, or about $28 million. And from other sources, we get just about $17 million. So all told, for the total budget for regional transit activities in the seven-county metropolitan area, it's $309 million, and those are the sources of revenue. Where it is spent, Metro Transit gets the lion's share of that, 69% at $212 million of the regional transit budget comes to Metro Transit. For the LRT, we got $18 million, or 6%, for the Hiawatha Light Rail Line. Metro Mobility is at 10% with $31 million. The opt-out's about 10% at $30 million. Contracted services of various sorts, four percent and $12 million. And various community transit activities we have are at 2% or $6 million. I wanted to give folks kind of a 30,000-foot view of where our revenues come from and where our revenues are spent.
Excuse me, Cherbell, is this include both your operating and your capital?
No, it doesn't.
This is just operating.
Thank you.
Yes,
Madam Chair. Current funding level outcomes. Growth in travel will continue a decade-long pattern of outstripping transportation investment, significant delay in implementing critical highway projects needed for congestion relief, and continued deterioration of our transit system. And one of the goals we have is to double our transit ridership by 2030, grow it by 50% by 2020. And in point of fact, our transit ridership has been slightly trending down over the last 5 to 7 years. That is something that is of great concern to me because I think it is a piece, though just a piece, of our dealing with the congestion puzzle. I believe there is a growing consensus, and certainly the Plenty administration believes that it's not all about roads, it's not all about transit, that really we need a multimodal solution to our transportation issues. People always try to pigeonhole folks into one camp or another, and I think that's a non-starter. The fact of the matter is that we need to push the envelope in every direction. And I think it is important for our economic competitiveness in addition to quality of life issues. As I said at the outset, I think it is the number one livability issue in the seven-county region. The program itself will accelerate critical highway expansion projects, expand and strengthen express commuter bus network. And as Mr. McFarland said, some would argue perhaps most importantly is develop a series of transit ways. The Northwest BRT, $20 million was just released for that. The North Star Rail Corridor, of course all of you are very familiar with that. The Cedar Avenue BRT, as well as the I-35 BRT, and also a transit way in the Central Corridor. The MVES transfer that was discussed in the earlier presentation will allow us to move forward and expedite those projects. It would approximately provide $100 million in new MVES revenues. As Mr. McFarland said, and here is a very important point, this is really predicated upon the notion that existing funding levels would stay at their current level. As I indicated, we get $59 million a year from the general fund. Right now, we get about $25 million from state general obligation bonds, federal New START dollars, which we use for both operations and capital, local contributions, that's variable, and our regional transit bonds, which is slated to be $32 million. That's a very important point to underscore, that if the MVEST transfer goes through and other revenues are taken, in other words, if the legislature gives with one hand but takes away with another, that, of course, will undermine this project significantly. Here, in interest of time, I won't belabor this. This just is a visual depiction of the Tier 1 transit ways that we would hope to expedite. It's important to understand that the focus for transit of this effort is to relieve congestion. When people say, what is at the center of our wheel? It is the relieving of congestion in the seven-county region. That's really what our goal is. As I indicated earlier, to increase transit ridership by 50% by 2020, here again, we hope to double it by 2030. That is a very ambitious goal, given that our transit ridership has been flat or slightly trending down. Mitigate congestion on heavily traveled corridors by eliminating over 100,000 trips per day. Carry up to one-third of people in highly congested corridors during peak hours. That's a goal of ours. Again, the focus is on congestion mitigation. Provide access to jobs for an additional 45,000 people each day, primarily during peak congested periods, and improve the environment by avoiding 23 tons of carbon monoxide emissions each day. That's what we hope to accomplish with that. And with that, Madam Chair, I'll stand for any questions the committee may have.
Thank you very much. Any questions for Chairman Bell at this time? Seeing none, thank you very much. Oh, I'm sorry. Try to get your hand up higher, Representative Hornstein. Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Mr. Bell, for your presentation. And I think you raised a lot of very good points in terms of why we need to invest in transit. I'm just concerned, and I'd like your perspective, is this really enough money to fund these Tier 1 projects? I applaud you for making sure that those are in here. Even with the new starts and the other sorts of money, I think it seems a little underfunded, and I wanted to get your comments. Do you have any really specific numbers in terms of how these other funding sources would get these projects done?
Chairman Bell.
Madam Chair, Representative Hornstein, that is somewhat of an open question. Of course, the world will change many times between now and 2020. I think the biggest unknown, quite candidly and bluntly, is the Central Corridor. We are doing a study now in terms of different modes of transit on that corridor, and depending upon that study and the position that this administration will take, will really be the answer to that question. And we hope to have that completed in the not too distant future. But that's going to be the heart of the answer to your question. So the real answer is I don't know yet, and it depends on how that study goes for the Central Corridor.
Thank you. Representative Burns.
And one final quick question, Madam Chair and Mr. Bell. You mentioned a couple of times that you had concerns about ridership being flat or trending down, and I know that some of that must be related to cuts in service and the recent strike. We always know that after a strike, it takes a little hit. But I know that the Hiawatha numbers have exceeded your expectations. And to what extent do you think that some of the cuts have contributed to the flat ridership?
Chairman Bell.
Madam Chair, Representative Hornstein, I think it is undeniable. There is whenever you increase cost, reduce service, interrupt service, that affects our relationship with our customer. And we had a serious strike. Quite candidly, I think it was necessary to get to restructuring of our health care package particularly, but it was 44 days long. It's something that I I am not proud of at all. And I think the dislocation that it caused to our customer base, the dislocation it caused to our employees is something that's regrettable. We have not quite built back from that. We've come back most of the way, but not quite. And in the last budget cycle, to come to terms with the $4.5 billion shortfall, we did have to cut some routes back and raise some fares. We didn't do an across-the-board fare increase, but had to do that selectively. And I think that had an impact as well. We are holding our own, quite candidly, but if you are a believer, as I am, and as I know you are, that transit is a piece, and just a piece of this puzzle, we need to move it forward. And I think that the governor has been quite courageous and that his proposal does that.
Thank you.
And Representative Hornstein and committee members, we, of course, will have a presentation by Metro Transit with their budget when we get the governor's budget proposal, and we'll have an opportunity to look at past performance of the bus and the Hiawatha line and their expenditures and then their requests moving forward in more detail. The purpose of today was just to do an overview of the governor's transportation plan, but we have plenty of time to look into more detail some of these issues in the future. Representative Nelson.
Oh, you got a question.
Okay. Representative Larson. No question. Representative Earhart.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Have any studies been done which indicate where the most people would be moved? I've always had the feeling, and it's been folklore, that there were reasons that the Hiawatha Quarter was developed. Economic development, land was available that was purchased years ago, which are all they're all good reasons. But had that line been constructed in conjunction with 35W going south, we probably would be moving a lot more people. So rather than just say Central Quarter is next, are there any studies to show where would a southwest quarter be better, or one that goes out 394, where we would really move some people?
Madam Chair, Representative Earhart, we have a number of transit corridors that we are looking at, and it is my understanding in analyzing the transit corridors, and you can see, I think in your materials, that not only do you see what the Tier 1 transit corridors are, but the Tier 2 as well, that the transit corridor that has the most potential for ridership is the Central Corridor. And I think that that it is projected that it would have 38,000 riders a day, if my memory serves me right. Now, people, this is, I hasten to add, an inexact science. The federal government gives us a criteria to use in building our ridership projections, but that they can be off the mark. We underestimated significantly the ridership on the Hiawatha line. It is twice, essentially, what we were anticipating. We were looking at about 60,000 riders a week, and we've got about 120. We've got 2.8 million riders to date on the Hiawatha line. And it is clearly one that people find a reason to use. Even folks who were skeptical of it would have to admit it has exceeded the expectations that I think that the public had.
Representative Earhart.
I guess maybe I should qualify that. When I say that maybe congestion relief would be better than moving people. I can see the line between this corridor, the Central Corridor, moving a lot of people, but not giving a lot of congestion relief. Some on 94, yeah, but not moving people off of 494, 169, and all the rest of the surrounding stuff that's so jammed. That's what I'm talking about. Moving people off of the congested highway.
Representative Earhart, I'm sure as we have proposals for different transit investments, they'll be able to show us the modeling that they do in the different corridors, and maybe we can in the future provide you with some more detailed information on the numbers and the congestion relief modeling and how they do that.
Madam Chair, I'm raising that question with lobbyists that have been calling on me in the Central Corridor, and I wanted to make Chair Bell aware of the fact that there is, I have some interest in that. And wish one more question.
Representative Earhart.
As I look at this map, it looks to me like Lakeville is not accessed by transit. Is there any reason for that? I may be incorrect.
Representative Earhart, there are plenty of communities that are within the transit taxing district that are not getting service at this time. It's highly unlikely that Met Council would provide service to an area outside the transit taxing district. That being said, members, in your packet, thank you, Chairman Bell. Representative Larson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Chairman Bell. I know that part of the premise for the package as it relates to transit is additional dollars, and certainly the constitutional dedication is the main part of that. But it doesn't seem that that's required constitutionally, that there be additional dollars. And can you comment on that, if that gives you any concern? Given the fact that we have a proposal that is that has a large number, the highway portion of it, I think you could have a significant, and I think we will have a significant policy debate about whether using those tax gas tax dollars into the future, first of all, if the assumptions are right on the growth in terms of the relevancy of the gas tax, because we've been hearing for years, don't build your future on a gas tax, because we're not going to be having gas tax won't be playing as major a role in the future. And yet this proposal clearly into nearly 2040 does that. But as it relates to transit, and while it says that it's the goal of this program to not have this just be dollar replacement, does that cause you some concern that knowing how the legislature resolves budget issues as we look to the future? And isn't it possible that it's a transit part of the budget that can take the big hit if this entire package is not implemented the way it's proposed?
Chair Bell.
Madam Chair, Representative Larson, to the extent to which, and I think I do understand your question, and I stated earlier, is that this program is predicated upon the legislature continuing to fund provide the general fund dollars. So if there were a constitutional dedication of MVEST, as I indicated, we get 21.5%. It's 43% of our budget. If the full MVEST allocation were to come to transportation, we were to get about 60% of that total amount, and it were constitutionally dedicated, but the rest of the dollars in the general fund went away from us, that does cause me a concern. My second response to your question is I do have some concerns about the stability of MVEST as a funding source, that it is somewhat volatile as a funding source, and that if that was also implicit in your question, yes, that does cause me some concern, but I live in an imperfect world, and I think that this is a reasonable approach to that and something that the public gets. They pay motor vehicle sales tax, and that goes for transportation activities, and I think that that connection is very important for the public to make. And the third point, I have long said, really since I became chair of the Met Council, that I think that transit needs a dedicated source of funding, in part because the planning cycles are so long, the budget's so large, that it is somewhat dissimilar to other functions of government. I think that transportation is different in this respect. I think most people believe there's a role for government in it. Most people believe our transportation system is broke. And the dollar amounts needed are so large, the planning cycle so long, that I think a dedicated source of funding is warranted. But it's a mixed bag. There's two edges to that sword. You get that dedicated source, and then it goes in the tank, and it can present a problem. And, yes, that does cause me some consternation. But on balance, I think it makes a great deal of sense, and I'm a strong supporter of the package.
Thank you very much. Members, in your folders is a red file folder. If you want any of your materials saved, you need to put them into your red save folder. You also were given a copy of draft rules for the committee. They were emailed to you. They're also in your packet. If you have any comments or suggestions, please get those to me by the end of the week. And with that, we're adjourned until the joint meeting with Transportation Policy at 2:30.